bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. I'm here with Alex G. Fox.
Hello.
We're going to discuss this week's photo news and answer your questions. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing not too bad at all, thank you.
Excellent. Good week?
I suppose I haven't achieved an awful lot, but I think I've not done anything wrong, so that's not bad.
It's our mission, mate, not to achieve an awful lot.
Yes, it's a mission.
What we get paid for, a lot for.
Yes.
No worries. The week in photography, there's a little bit to talk about. If you got your iPhone 5, you got it last Friday, and you thought it was fine and dandy and wonderful and luscious, you may, however, have a few issues. One of them seems to be that there's a purple haze. Jimmy would be proud. And it's coming in wherever you've got flare out on your images. So I don't know why it's doing this. Have you got any thoughts as to what's causing it, Alex? Because it's not lens flare. It looks a bit more like a sort of chromatic aberration, doesn't it? But
yeah, but I mean, I sent you an image just before. It's not unusual for iPhone. In fact, it's a trick that I used to use to make some of... There you go. There's a picture up there. It's a trick I used to use to make some of the less interesting iPhone pictures more interesting. It seems to be something to do with the sensors, and it seems to be something to do with one of the filters on the sensors. Daylight is obviously being filtered in a certain way, and once it gets over a level, if you like, you know, a level of brightness, it looks like the red can't cope anymore and bleeding over. It's something I used to actually use actually when I used lens flare, but all the lens flares used to have a red around the edge of it. Seems to be purple, which I would suggest is more to do with the, I think they've got a crystal lens on it, which might just, I think it's the same problem, exactly the same red, but it's slightly being tinted with blue. So maybe it's...
Yeah. I mean, if you get, presumably what are whites on your image, you're getting full value, 255, 255, 255 across green, blue and red. And red. And if it's trying to find something in a full value, and it's overweighting one value over the other, it's going to get pinks from the red spectrum, and it's going to get purples presumably from the blue and red spectrum added together. So this is it not dealing with blue particularly well. Now they said they've gone to the screen is now sRGB as the standard, which if the old one wasn't sRGB. I'm surprised because, I mean, that seems to be the emitted light standard as opposed to Adobe RGB, which is trying to image reflected light. I would have thought that this was probably something wrong with the sensor. The sensor's not reading the reds and blues properly.
Yeah, but there's just something wrong with it. There was something wrong with the last one. I mean, the one thing you can say about this picture is the iPhone 5 took an awful lot sharper picture than the 4S.
Yeah, it certainly did. But, I mean, that's taken through something as well. That's looked like it's through plastic.
Yeah, again, this is a particularly bad example then, because if you're talking about you've got another layer of, I mean, in this case, plastic, to be diffracting the light. I mean, this as an image is a particularly poor example of a test. I mean, I'm at this and I wouldn't like to.
There are some better images out there. I just didn't find them. And they are taken full view. They're not just, they're not all through glass or plastic. But
to me, and even if you look at the tone of the rest of the picture, it almost looks like it's, in some way, the camera's trying to polarise the image.
Yeah, but you see, this is the point. If you've got an aberration on yellow, which is what the one on the left looks like, it looks more natural than an aberration on the blue, because the aberration on the blue is highlighting the reds as well and giving a purple, whereas the image on the left is too yellow by quite a ways. But the yellow off the sun is a natural thing to the eye.
Yeah, but I mean, I think is a fundamental problem with cell cameras, not iPhone or anyone in particular, is because you've got no control over so much of the facility, if you like. You can't control the aperture. And the reason I think this problem in the first place is the aperture is wrong for the picture.
Your audio is just fading in and out a little bit, mate, if you...
Okay. An awful lot about it at the moment, but
no, it's just it's coming strong and then going out again. So, phasing a little bit more, I would have said, perhaps. The Sony HX10 has been released. It's full manual control, compact camera. It's got built-in GPS. It's got built-in picture effects and things like that. Apparently, the screen on the back is really, really nice as well. Doesn't shoot RAW, and apparently the processing time between images can be a bit long as well from the review that's been put out on TechRadar. Price on this thing's £299 in the UK market. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, they're pushing the boundaries a bit of megapixelage again.
Mm.
Things like GPS. It's got full manual control. You know, there's a lot about this that is to be liked. 16 times optical zoom's not to be sniffed at, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's getting to there's like a level of, if you like, affordable point and shoot. And I'd say this is getting to that sort of level where, you know, you're not spending a fortune. It's almost something you can purchase on a whim. You know, you're not talking about the £800,000 point and shoots. And it's the next stage on from design over quality. I think this thing, you know, it's not pretty. It's not the Sony gorgeous looking, very clever, you know, slim line, almost looks like a phone type camera. This is a put in your pocket or put in your handbag and you will get a pretty decent shot, full HD video. There's not an awful lot this thing can't do for you for not an enormous amount of money.
Well, the thing is that with this that I looked at it, I mean, when you look at the specs of what's on the technical specs, you're kind of like, that's a little bit semi, okay, fine, 18 megapixels, but that's a bit much really probably for a compact. But actually, when you look at the images that it produces, they're very good. They're very, very good. The top-end images, the 12-800 ISO images, not very good at all. But I thought the image values were excellent.
Yeah, I mean, it still surprises me because technologically it's really not difficult because the, you know, the cell phone cameras are proving it. But when you've got 18 megapixels, you really should have the option of doubling up on pixels. You should be able to have that option so you get a lot better low light noise. So, for instance, if you go over 800, it should turn itself into a 9-megapixel camera or a 10-megapixel camera and then do the method of doubling pixels to get less interference.
Yeah, I mean, at 1600, this is starting to break down badly, and at 3200, it's unusable.
But there's enough spare capacity, if you like, in this camera to be able to that technique of, you know, double, I don't know what the word is. It's something.
Well, you'd sell 9 megapixels commercially for probably up to about A2.
Yeah, of course. But the point is with this, I mean, to have that option to say, okay, high ISO, you can then high ISO. It's like you do with the lenses. You know, if you put in, you know, the wrong type of lens, you're halving the amount of the megapixels to compensate, but you'll get twice a zoom and various things like that. This should be an option in these cameras to say, okay, well, if you're going to go night clubbing and you need to shoot at 6400 or, you know, 12,000 or something, because of the way this works, it will give you a half decent image with image stabilization and doubling up on the pixels. You'll be able to get a decent picture indoors at night that you'll be able to, you'd definitely be able to stick it on Facebook or somewhere else like that.
Mm.
It's not difficult. It's a bit of software. The hardware's already in there.
Yeah.
To me, it's a very, very short-sighted thing to do.
Yeah, the effects that they show on this are pretty poor. There's one watercolor effect here that I've got to say it's a really nasty image, and the illustration filter is even worse. Why on earth they still? Maybe it's just because it's not me that they're trying to sell to, but the colored modes and those kind of things on these cameras. There's so much you can do post processing now. I mean, we're anticipating the launch of Adobe Photoshop Elements 11 in the next week. Why? Why on earth do you do it in camera now when for £50 you've got untold flexibility with a full range image rather than screwing your original, which is what this is doing?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, some of these filters are
nasty
versions of you know, what's available free.
Yeah.
You know, I'm having a close look at, say, this what's called a soft high key filter. And other than not liking the person you want to give the picture to, I can't think of any reason why you'd want to use that.
No, it is nasty. I'll put the link in the chat room and the chat room can start throwing some abuse about it while we soldier on with the rest of the news. There we go. Enjoy. Enjoy. While we're on new cameras then, Sigma have got the DP2 Merrill out there. I don't know why it's called Merrill, but never mind. She was obviously well in with the designers. This is £799, and that's the cheapest deal you can get online at the moment at Wex Photographic. It's very boxy, very basic. Image quality looked quite good, I have to say. Not too bad at all. Again, started to break down rapidly from 800 onwards in terms of the ISO. But I've got to say, based on the specs that I read for this and the features, it's a big ask at £800.
Yeah, I mean, I think their reasoning is they're using their, and they've stuck by it for, it's got to be nearly 10 years now, but what they call their, is it called a fovean sensor?
Yeah.
The red, the green, and the blue separately.
Mm.
That is what they use for their top-end DSLRs, and the reasoning is you've literally, it's almost like having three sensors. It doesn't, not one sensor that shoots, you know, three colors. So
I mean, they're listing this at 48 megapixels, but it really isn't. It's 4.8 times 3.2 times 3.
It's a strange figure. But, you know, the idea of this originally was you were going to get, or at the time, when this was in competition with normal CMOS sensors, you were getting a better color reproduction. At the time, this was a really good idea, and it worked. Compared to what the CMOS sensors are now and the price of a CMOS sensor, this isn't up to the job. But they've, it's almost like we designed this, we've got the pattern for this. If we don't use it, no one ever will. And they seem to be, flogging a dead horse is the wrong thing, because there are people that absolutely swear by it. And if you, you know, if it's part of your work flow, then I dare say using this type of sensor does work for you. I mean, for sort of color reproduction work, it is slightly easier to be able to tweak colors and get, you know, if you like, get the original color balance right in the first place. But, you know, this is a point and shoot. I can't imagine many people that color is absolutely paramount to them is going to use a point and shoot. You're going to spend more money, I'm sure, but you're going to spend money on something that is designed for the job.
Well, if I just put an image up here, that is 100 ISO. That's 100% crop, so that's a 1-to-1 ratio on pixel to image ratio for ISO 100. Here's 3200 in comparison. If you're watching it now, that's a huge degradation in image quality. It's enormous, and I've got to say, my Canon 600D, which was an under £500 camera, is phenomenally better than that at 3200. That is a nonsensical degradation. And there's still a 6400 that comes after that, which, if you want to see real nasty, this is untold nastiness. It's almost color saturation has gone entirely. They are really, really bad. And for £800 on sensors that they say is cutting edge technology, that's close, I would say, to highway robbery.
Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, the whole idea of this thing is the sensor was supposed to be, you know, what saved the machine, you know, the whole point of it. But to come out with something that's basically, I mean, it's, I don't even know what the word is. I don't really want to say appalling, but I can't think of anything else.
it's theft. I'm telling you.
But you thought, you know, somebody somewhere would have gone, hold on, we can't put this out. You know, what's this going to make us look like? I mean, I've got to admit, if you look along the raws, they are Oh, well, they're an awful lot better. I mean, a good example is if you look at the, let's see what one this is.
But you'd expect two stops improvement, wouldn't you? You'd expect the 800 RAW to be as good as the 3200. Sorry, you'd expect the 800 JPEG to be as good as the 3200 RAW, and it's not.
No. But the thing is, the RAW does hold up, which is part of what Favion is about. The RAW does hold up to 800. 1600 is getting pretty dicey. But 800 is a reasonable picture on the RAW. But 800 on the JPEG, do you know what? I don't even think 100 on the JPEG's up to scratch.
Not really. I'm not impressed at all. And for the price, if they were saying that this was a £400 camera or a 299, I'd say, well, well done. Congratulations. But at £800, I'm afraid it's theft.
I don't agree with you, because I think if they said to me that's 50 quid, I said, no, 50 quid is a couple of nights out in the pub. I'd rather do that.
There you go. Alex Fox speaks. Couldn't have put it better myself. Well done, mate.
We've got... you know what? iPhone 3G, I do.
It would be far better. Far better. 4S, superb. Right, Manfrotto. I bought a new Manfrotto tripod. I've been an iron about getting a tripod. I want a lighter and smaller one than the big one that I've got that's the same as the one that I've still got in my loft that you lent me. Thank you very much. I've still got to get it back to you. But I went out and I got myself a Manfrotto carbon fibre with a three-way head on the top. I got this exact one. Fantastic. 299, I think they're talking, aren't they? Or is it 229? 249, sorry. It's the 290 carbon fibre tripod with head, 24995. Guess what?
What?
They're giving a giveaway on them now. Because I bought mine last week, bastards. All you've got to do is enter their competition and they'll give you the price of this back. So I missed out on it, but never mind. Now, the one thing I did pick on this, though, is I bought that last week and I've got to say I'm duly impressed. A lot of the carbon fibre ones I've been looking at as a bit too flimsy and not really sturdy enough to take around. But I've had this one for a week now. No, I've had it for 2 weeks now. And I love that head. That head is the best head I've got. The one that I've currently got on my big one, my 8 foot stand, this head is far better. There's far much more traction in it. It grips far better. It doesn't move as much. Yes, it's not as old, but also it's a really, really beautifully made head to the thing. So at 249, what's your view on the price there? I actually got mine slightly cheaper than that. I paid 229 for mine, and it was at Jessop's of all places.
I mean, price-wise, I mean, if no one's ever bought a tripod before, that's very, very reasonable. I mean, I've paid quite a bit more just for the head before.
Yeah.
You've got to remember these days, I mean, I wish I could carry two sets of kit around with me because of, I carry a tripod that makes the thing I lent you look lightweight.
Yeah.
Because of sometimes, on a day, I'll need to stick a big 10-8 camera on the back of it.
Yeah.
Funnily enough. And I need something that can more or less take my body weight. Because once you start, you know, playing around with that on full bellow extension with your slides in the back, I mean, the slide plates weigh a half a ton. You need something, you know, that you need something that you could stand on if you were in the circus. You could stand on there on one leg and it wouldn't move. But for DSLR, video camera, or anything under, I don't know how things work out, a couple of kilograms.
Yeah.
And a normal heavy weight for a DSLR, this thing and the like, is more than enough. You know, it goes up higher. It's got, you really do need the three-way adjust.
Yeah, I mean, we keep getting questions about people going for ball heads. Just never buy a ball head. Never buy a ball head. It will satisfy you for about 10 days and then it'll be an utter waste of money.
Get once,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think to be honest, I'd say a head is if I had the money, it's the wrong way of putting it. If I say I had £300 to spend, and I mean this is a good buy, but if I had £300 to spend, I would spend £100 on the tripod and £200 on the head.
Yeah,
I think the head is far more important than the tripod, and you know, Manfrotto make some really nice. They lock in good positions. The only thing I would have said. Or most situations these days, the modern tripod, and I can't remember what they're called, that when they have the detachable or the rotatable central column, And quite often I find myself, I do have one, which I don't take out with me unless I know I need it. But I do quite often find I'm in a situation where that column being able to be either reversed, which most of them are automatically anyway, because they actually have a screw thread on the top and the bottom. But you know the ones where you can actually turn it at 90 degrees or swivel it and do various things with a central column? You'll be amazed how, once you've got that facility, how often you find it would have been really, really useful for you.
Yeah. I mean, this is a friction grip on the center column. There's no crank or anything like that like you used to get on some of them.
Because of part of, a big part of what I do is trying to make things square. Because if you're shooting something in a picture frame, it's very obvious when you're finished if it's not square. So that minor adjustment can be the difference between something being off the parallel and on the parallel, especially, you know, top to bottom. So I do have an awful lot of trouble with if I don't have a winding handle. And also with the friction grip, you can easily swing the camera left and right. Anything I'd rather do with the head. So, but you know, this is good value. And, you know, other than Gitzo, I've always called them Gitzo, Manfrotto has always been my second choice of tripod. And the fact that they're about quarter the price makes them quite often makes them my first choice.
Yeah, I've had three now and I like them. I'm not going to go anywhere else. Flicking Amazing is a new iPad application which supposedly has makes better use of the multiple cores within the iPad 3 and also adapts for the Retina display as well. So if you've got the Retina display iPad 3, this is, and you love Flickr, then this is the thing for you. It's £1.99 in the UK store. I've downloaded it and started having a play with it, but the problem is for some reason it wouldn't take my password for Flickr, so I haven't been able to look at any pictures yet on Flickr accounts. But it gives you a complete readout, and it's full screen. You get to see everything. Are you a Flickr man, Alex?
Only as far as we use the site for the network. I never take a picture that I want anyone else to have. And if I do, I send it to them.
Yeah.
Family event, I tend to set up something on one of my websites and say, here you go, click a button and you can have the entire batch. I don't share things. Yeah, it's because I'm an antisocial sod. I have seen Flickr. I really do enjoy looking at other people's work on Flickr. I don't mean this condescendingly at all. I really enjoy looking at amateur photographers' work on Flickr, because of once you've been a photographer for a while, and you'll find this as well, you become a bit passé about the whole thing. And also, in a funny way, you come a bit, I don't want to see someone else's work just in case it's better than mine, you know? But when you see people that you know that are interested in photography for the love of photography, which is, after a while, we do this show, and you see people's efforts, and you see, it's so nice to be able to encourage someone and say, you know what, you really are as good as I think you are, and you keep it up. And things like this is, I think Flickr is more of a becoming like a social media thing. I don't think it's a photo anymore. I think it's Twitter with photographs, and based on photographs. And I really like it. And I think to link this to a social network with pieces of software like this, where quite often when you look at Flickr, literally the word flick means just quickly just flick through some pictures, but this gives you the ability to stop and really have a good look at what the person's trying to show you with the specs, and it actually gives you technical information on how the picture was taken as well. I think it's a good learning tool. I think this is a very nice piece of software. It's just a shame that it's limited to, the high-end tablet.
Good. Your questions. We've had quite a few this week. That's why we're dropping off the news a bit soon and going into the questions. Question one comes from Claire in Durham. Thank you for writing in, Claire. I'm a very amateur photographer. In fact, I only really use my old iPhone 3GS. My question is simple. Can you recommend a very simple one-click iPhone app that fixes my photos? It really needs to be simple. I've been told about Instagram, but I thought that was used to share images only. Thanks, Claire in Durham. Fire off, Alex.
Well, yeah, I'm not being an Instagram user myself, I would have said, yes, it is for adulterating pictures and share. I quite like the Camera Plus, which we sort of half, did we review? No, it's in here. Well, we never reviewed it. There you go. There's a story in here about Camera Plus, funnily enough, which we haven't talked about. And I actually, that probably is my favorite piece of one-click fix software. It gives you the ability to do other clever things, and it gives you the ability to do some very clever things. But for a sort of an instant sharpen fix, get the tonal quality slightly better, I think you can't do much better than Camera Plus. I know there's others out there that do far more complicated, but I think Camera Plus is probably where I'd say is a really good place to start. I'm not sure how much it costs on the App Store, but it will be, you know, $1.99 type price. It won't be any more than that, I shouldn't think.
Yeah, no, I don't know if I said it or not, but the amazing Flickr thing, which I've now got working actually while you were talking there, is that. Do you remember the one that Kate, who came to the London Mac User Group, she had a, it wasn't a one-click thing though, it was a bit more, it was a touch closer to Photoshop, but it was it, I can't remember it, Photo...
Oh, I got that, actually. Is it Photoshop Express or Photo Express or something?
No, I can't remember the bloody name of it. It was about £4.99. It wasn't cheap, but it was... we'll let the chat room have a go at that one. Photogene, says Windrider in the chat room. You get a second as well from Teresa on Camera Plus, but Pete says Photogene. He says that's his favourite. And apparently Camera Plus is on sale this week, or it was yesterday as well. I'm trying to think of the ones. I was trying to say Snagit Pro, but it's not Snagit because that's Camtasia-y type software. I'll have a think.
I've got about 20 on my phone because I sort of bought them, reviewed them, and when I did the iOS 6 update, I think I've got rid of every single one of them. So I don't think. Remembering that on iOS 5, 2.6, there is an inbuilt sort of quick fix built into the camera app in the phone. It's not very good.
Yeah, I think you can do levels, but I'm just trying to have a go myself.
But I mean, I quite like Camera Plus. I like the ease of it. And, you know, I mean, I am a Photoshop, you know, CS5, not CS6 user. And, you know, as we know, 99.763% of it is completely pointless.
Yeah, you've got basic edit. That's all.
But Camera Plus is where I'd go anyway.
Snapseed, that was it. Thank you.
Did I not say that?
No, Snapseed. That's the one that Kate recommended, and I agree. Very good, $4.99. And the other one that Teresa says is Photo Toaster. It straightens pictures as well and puts them back into Camera Plus afterwards, which is nice. Question two, Colin D in Ipswich. Hello, I'm quite new to DSLR photography, and I've bought myself an old Nikon D90. Your territory then. I've bought it secondhand with some lenses and filters. Included in the bundle of goods, I have a polarizing filter. I've got a vague idea what this does, but I don't like, but I'd like a decent explanation as to what it can be used for and how to use it. Thanks for the show, Colin D. Go on in, mate.
Decent explanation. Better go somewhere else then.
Well, I mean, basically polarizers is change. It's attenuating frequency of light. So attenuation is slowing down or stopping. So any polarizer that you've got, as you turn it or orient it differently, it will change the frequency of the lights that it attenuates. So you'll stop some frequencies coming through, blues particularly and things like that are attenuated very easily. And if you get the attenuation right, effectively you'll get rid of reflections of skies and things like that in glass, which is why you can see through the glass instead of getting the reflection and the opacity off it. If you've got a polarizer, though, do be careful because... That's a D90, that's going to need a circular polarizer. Linear polarizer will give you some fabulous effects, but there won't be any photos that you'd want to show your parents. Is that about fair?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I always saw it as, you know, an a tiny, 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 tiny set of Venetian blinds. What it does, it changes the angle that the light can pass through to the lens and therefore the sensor. So, I mean, the thing you really got to be careful with a polarizing lens, if you do get rid of all the reflections you want and you do be able, I mean, a a classic is looking at a car window. If you get a Cope and you're taking a picture and you're just, you see the sky, you just see a reflection off of the car. If you get the polarizing lens right, you'll be able to see into that car. There will be no reflection. It's like magic. It's like takes away the window. But what you will then find is you've got to be very careful because you're going to have to adjust the colors to compensate for the polarizing lens. So if you're particularly interested in the color of a picture, if you take a polarizing picture, take two, one with something that you can read a white balance off, and one obviously is your non-white balance picture, because of that's, I don't tend to use polarizing lenses. I tend to use polarizing lights, which do the same thing. It just gives you slightly more control over it. But I have to have two versions, one with literally a piece of gray card in front of what I'm shooting, and the other version, because then I can go into Photoshop and I can just get the white balance corrected for the polarize. And then you get a beautiful picture. I mean, I use it because it limits the amount of highlights you get off a varnish on a painting. So, I mean, you know, it's a specialist use for it, but that's why I use it. But it does dramatically alter the colors of your images. So, yes, it's very good, but be aware that it will change the tonal quality dramatically quite often of what you've shot.
It's reducing reds, greens, and blues.
Yeah, depending what...
Which way you turn it.
There you go.
Question three. It's from XMC. I'll say that again. I don't own either Photoshop Elements or Lightroom, but if I was to buy one for photo processing, what are the pros and cons of each? Which would the panel choose? I seem to remember one of you saying that Adobe Bridge has all the functionality of Lightroom, but no idea what Adobe Bridge is. I don't generally like Adobe bloatware, but I think it's likely to get more regularly updated than Aperture, which has been my preferred choice so far for Mac. Or is Aperture good enough for processing? I'm not worried about the organizational side of things. XMC.
That's a, it's you know, it's just an Android iPhone question, isn't it? Lightroom, bought it, used it, don't use it. Adobe Bridge, use it, but only as an organizational piece of software to get to normally Photoshop.
But you can't buy Adobe Bridge on its own. It comes as part of the software.
Yeah, it's packaged in with Elements or whatever you want to use. Elements is substantially cheaper than any other option. And the new Elements, which I think is it due out very soon?
The 11, and it's due in 2 weeks.
Okay. Now, I would hazard a guess that, I mean, you look at 10, and unless you're a pro, 10 will do anyone at all. I would imagine 11's not going to be worse. So I don't know what full Photoshop Elements is, about £60-70.
Yeah, I mean, you can usually say that you're about 2 to 3 issues of Photoshop behind with Elements. So at the moment on 10, you're probably getting Photoshop CS3 level processing.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's enough that still use CS.
But that's 90% of what I do, so plus. So I would say that wait for 2 weeks, and for £50 ish, you're going to find that Photoshop Elements 11 is going to be in the Mac App Store, and you're going to get 5 licenses, £50. I can't wait. And it'll process your PSDs as well if you've saved them in Mac's compatibility mode from Photoshop. You have got it.
You know, when I used the reference between iPhone and Android, it really does feel like that to me because of the way all the Apple software actually works. It tends to be all on sort of visual sliders and various things. And I just find that because I suppose I learned the Photoshop way of doing everything, which is slightly more cumbersome, if you like, it's not so intuitive. I do find sort of the Lightroom Aperture way of doing things slightly, I'm one of those people that need to lift the lid off the bonnet to see how the engine works a bit. And I find sort of Lightroom, I find Apple software when it comes to photography slightly too one-stop shop. I prefer the Adobe method of being able to just tweak a little bit more without it just being Aperture, for instance, you sort of pull a slider to see what's going on, whereas Adobe seems to be more, mathematical in its approach. And I personally prefer that. I think if you're more logical, go with an Adobe. If you're more artistic, visual, then maybe go with Apple.
Right. Okay. Well, question four is an imaging question as well, so we might have answered some of this one with that one. But this comes from Dr. Steve. He's a doctor, mate, so you've got to give a proper answer now. No screwing around. No trying to pull the wool over his eyes. In Fordbridge in Hampshire. Hi, guys. Great show. Very informative, but I'm confused about imaging software. I shoot with a 40D. Used to be my second camera. There you go. I might give this away soon as a prize. There's my old 40D. And use Canon DPP for editing on PCs and Macs. Would there be a great advantage for moving to Adobe software or something else? If I were to switch to Adobe, I'm confused as to which titles, Photoshop, Lightroom, etc. I'm thinking of giving the monthly subscription, but don't know much about it and what should happen. So, PS, any views on the 5D Mark II? Go for it now or remain patient for the 6D or save up for a Mark III? I've heard lots of bad things about the Mark III and people saying that the Mark III is better in some areas, worse in others, and for video, 5D Mark II is still significantly better. So, and I've got to say, I had a go with the 5D Mark III the other week, and the video's no better than what I shoot on my 600D. Sorry.
Canon, the only company I know recently that have actually brought out an upgrade that's more, well, it's not as good as the original. It's a very strange thing to do.
There was a question as well. The chat room's now chipping in with this one. Jim says he uses Lightroom 4 because it works with the X-Pro 1. Aperture still doesn't support it. And Teresa says, yeah, that's really important. Aperture doesn't tend to support some of the brands of cameras. Some of the alternatives to Lightroom and Aperture are worth a look. Pixelmator might fit with their needs as well. And is it GIMP that's now gone full frame? It's a full contained application in the Mac App Store and it's free. Very, very good.
With that, weren't they? But they haven't actually. They've bundled it in with something to do with. Oh, it's something to do with Google Drive. I noticed it the other day because it was all this old Picasso's going, we're all going to cry. But I noticed that if you buy like a I don't know what it is, maybe it's the extra storage for the photo thing on Google Drive, you get Picasa. So it's not gone, it's just gone behind the paywall. And we're not talking about a lot, we're talking about £20 a year or something, and you get all the goodness that comes with the Google Drive extras. But anyway, I would, to be honest, I wouldn't go and spend any money on a subscription on anything Adobe until you know what you're doing, because that subscription covers thousands and thousands of pounds worth of software. And it's not just photo software, it's video software. It's software that you wouldn't even know what it did if you jumped up and bit use hype software. There's like two people and a dog that know how some of it works. If I was going to do anything, I would go and buy, again, I'd go and buy Adobe and I would play with that for a few months and decide whether that's the way you want to go. And if you find there's anything that doesn't do for you above what you're using on that Canon DPP, I'd be amazed. And I would give your money or time, you know, have more money and time to spare than anything with the Adobe subscription service. It's overkill for professionals. So for anyone else, I don't know if what overkill plus, I don't know if that's a saying or not, but I would just stick with something like, I mean, you can use the free software, but you know, you've already got a piece of software, this Canon DPP. So I would say that's on par with what you get for nothing. So the next stage up is a sort of 50, 60 pound Adobe Elements. And I would always recommend that above anything else as a starting point.
You've always got 30 days with Adobe as well, as Jim points out in the chat room. So most of the Adobe stuff, you can have a 30 day trial with it. And the monthly subscription is great because you can cancel that whenever you fancy. So I would say though, Elements, I think if you like using layers, and layers are very important to me, and I'm guessing to Alex as well, because if you've got an image that you want to pop a layer out, you want to screw around with that separately and not damage your original layer, or start to blend layers together and change opacities to see what effects you get from different layers for colouring, then I would always go for Elements because it does a tremendous amount for the money. But if you're looking for file storage for Lightroom and Aperture, I don't use them. I have a better system of file storage. I just know where photos are because of the way that I categorize them in Finder. So it's far easier for me to do it that way. It's just laziness, I think, looking for visual storage reference repositories.
I think you went with Levels because of people think editing photographs is to do with cloning and stamping, and yes, it is, and to a certain extent healing, but the real correction of photographs is done with layers. I reckon if I ever corrected something on the original layer, it would be a suicidal thing for me to do. I mean, it just, it's techniques I've worked out of my own over the years, but I can use layers and various built-in dust scratch removals and then blending modes to put the layers back together that you can remove. You know, for instance, if I've got a piece, of work which is covered in white highlight spots with varnish, using various layers, various blending modes, and various automatic dust removal systems on various different layers and blending modes, I can get rid of 99% of that within 2 minutes. And, you know, it's gone. It's just not there anymore. And the picture looks amazingly clean. In the old days, I had started off, the first thing I ever used, I think it was Coral Paint or whatever it was called in the time, where I had to hand dot out with the right color, paint out every single dot on every single picture. And it used to take me, say, 5 hours to do one picture, and it wasn't very good. And now with layers, and this is where it comes into its own, Adobe, you can do very 5 minutes, you can do a better job than you could ever do manually without layers. So if that's what you're looking at, then Photoshop, Elements every single time.
Absolutely. Good, wise words, mate. If you've got a question for us, send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll shove it in. And we do answer your questions. We always answer every question that comes in on air. We promise everyone. If I've missed one, just let me know. I'm sorry, just because I'm useless. We're going to be back again next week at 2 o'clock. We've got Kevin returning next week, and Forsey will be back as well, I think. He was going to be back this week, but he's been called into Condé Nast. He's going to get his bottom smacked, I think. Where can we get you, Alex?
You can get me at Alex G Fox on Twitter. And try listening to the media show. We're trying to build it up again. And, got anything you'd like to discuss on the media show? In fact, if you're really, really good and you want to be on it and you're not busy on UK Sunday afternoon time, you know, send us an email. I've no idea what the email address is, but you can
BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com.
Send one of those in, and with any stories, any ideas, and if you particularly into anything media related, let us know and maybe we can get you on the show.
Yes, very good. Nice to see Mr. Madden on as well this weekend. He's come out of self-imposed exile.
Easier for him. One day I'll actually see him again.
He's been out for a beer.
Not with me, eh?
This podcast and all the others is sponsored by UK2.net. Please, please, please support them, because they support British Tech Network, have done for 3 years, are going to for another 2 years. So please look after them. Go to our website, britishtechnetwork.com, click on their link, and then go back and look at the offer codes and zero your basket, effectively. You can get tons and tons of deal. Go and have a play, look at what they are, and have a look at some of the other podcasts on the network, because last week we put the big show out on the Mac feed because we hadn't got a Mac show to put out. And I got lots of nice emails from people saying how much they enjoyed the other shows. So thanks very much. Please go and have a try of some of the others, especially things like Media Show, Game Show, and iOS Show, and that kind of thing. See you next week. Thanks for listening. Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.